So I was running for Congress. I'm not now, but I was. Spent a lot of time preparing, and I was involved in the process, and still a bit. And I learned something about our political process, and I'm going to share it with you right now. Hold on to your hats. There's a lot of money in politics. Shocker. Right? So part of the job, and question you're asked as soon as you start considering this by every political person you meet, can you raise money? Got to raise money. You need lots of money. Why do you need lots of money? You need money for staff. You need money for polling. You need money for mailings, all those things you get in your mailbox that you throw away. The digital media and the TV ads. You need money for all of that. And then I was told I needed to spend lots of money, thousands of dollars, on Oppo research. Opposition research. Now, there hadn't been a primary yet. And I needed to do Oppo research. I had a contract with somebody to do that. And it didn't make sense to me. Why was I researching the opposition when there wasn't a race yet? We were just up and running. Everything was just starting. Had it been a primary. Opposition research, I was told, is to hire someone who investigates me. I was going to hire someone to investigate me, the candidate, to search every public record that was available about me. Every election that I had voted in, to see if I had, and every election I didn't, because those records exist. Was there a tax lien against me? Was I ever late on my taxes? Who did I give money to and who didn't I give money to? To see if I had actually graduated college from the college I said I graduated from with the degrees I said. They were going to check that out to see if I graduated from Hebrew Union College. I really felt bad for this one. They were going to listen to every sermon. Why do you laugh at you? That's not very nice. It was going to be a joy, a blessing for them to listen to every public sermon I had ever done. And we've been online for 10 years for high holidays and more. And every podcast. I have over 580 now podcasts online. I did require the person to sign a waiver. They wouldn't listen while driving, though. So in case they fell asleep, I wouldn't be sick. Okay. They were going to listen to every sermon, have to read every rabbi's message. I've been a rabbi for almost 40 years. They were going to have to see every place I had ever spoken, to see every article I was ever quoted in. They were going to do all that, all to see if there was something damaging, some fragment of information that could be used against me during the campaign, to see if I said something back then that I might disagree with today, to see if I had ever posted an inappropriate picture. You're all laughing. I was paying this person. An inappropriate text to see if I had done something morally wrong. You name it, that's what this person's job was. It was to look through my life as if they were an archaeologist, but worse, they were supposed to look through it if they were an archaeologist who wanted to use whatever they found against me. So let me be frank. I'm actually over 60 years old. And I have lived, I hope, a life that I'm proud of. But over 60 plus years, I'm not perfect. I've done and I've said things that I regret. I'm guessing there are people who've met me who probably don't like me. Can you believe that? But I'm just one, over 60, you know, right? Somebody who didn't like me or somebody who I said something that they thought was inappropriate or mean spirit or something. I'm guessing there may be someone here or somebody in our congregation who has felt slighted at some point. They were going to look and explore. So I had to think about this. This process of having someone investigate my life was hard for me to get my head around. What I was trying to understand, I signed a contract with this person. I gave them permission to do it. And they were going to interview me. They asked me all kinds of interesting questions. Start thinking the questions you're going to be asked. And I said, yep, go ahead. And while I agreed to all this, I signed the contract, and I don't think I have any skeletons in my closet. I think I've lived a good life. I had to wonder. I've given hundreds, if not thousands, of talks. I've written tens of thousands of words. Was there something that I said? Somebody angry with me that I don't know about? Does somebody have a grudge? I was also told, oh, Bob, let's look at it. We're going to also try to find some good stuff on you, too. That was going to be, the idea was they were going to find some values or themes maybe I talked about through the course of my life that they were going to use in those videos or those ads about meet the candidate, Robert Barr, you know, standing there. They were going to use those things there, the positive elements. And while they kept on saying, Bob, there's some positive stuff, it didn't stop me thinking about what might be discovered, what I had done that I long ago forgot about, who might hold a grudge. And maybe my concerns were misplaced. Maybe I was overbuilding it. But it was like one of those songs you get in your head you can't get out of. It's a small world after all. Oh, aren't you going to all hate me after this? I'm sorry. But I wanted to make a point. Now you got it. But every once in a while, I'd wake up in the middle and go, oh, no, what's going to happen? As I began to think about it, I began to go, what's a fair and admissible question? This was all before the recent confirmation hearings I was writing this, so this is not about my disclaimer. Okay. Is there a statute of limitation in life? When does our past actually become our past and not define who we are? When do youthful indiscretions become youthful indiscretions? And conversely, when are some behaviors so defining of us they don't fall into the category, that category? They really are defining of who we are. We were all younger once. Being young means making mistakes. That's part of what being youthful is. We're supposed to make mistakes when you're, as long as we survive them and we learn from them, we grow from them. But I wondered, remember when you were in school, they used to say there's a permanent record? I keep on wondering, is there a permanent record for Bobby Barr, that was what I was called back in the day, of Hampton Elementary School in Detroit? Was it written down somewhere? Did it get passed to somebody? Or when I was in the elementary school, the junior high? Or what about college? Where did all that go? Each of us carries our past with us. Who gets to decide when our past is over and we're allowed to move on? When our missteps really were just missteps, not who we are as a person. And when are those behaviors so egregious that they deserve never to be forgotten? And then what about the infractions we all have in life where we know we've made a mistake and we try to repair the damage? We've all done that. I have. But what happens when only the damage is talked about but never the repair? Someone might discover that. What about infractions or pain or hurt that we inflicted that we weren't aware of, that the person whom we bruised never told us, but they still carry that hurt in their heart? I have to imagine over a lifetime that's happened more than once. What's our responsibility to someone who never lets us know that we hurt them? It became like a movie reel at times in my life. I kept on flipping through the pages and the years. Even though I understood it was only supposed to uncover public mistakes, I started thinking about private mistakes as well. So for me, this notion of opposition research became a journey of self-discovery, of exploration. At some point, it ceased to be political for me, and it was about life as a whole. And as a candidate, I began to realize my life is not lived in isolation. I wondered who else might be pulled into this vortex of information gathering. My wife? My children? Friends? You, the congregation? Who would be pulled in and researched to talk about who Robert Barr is? It challenged me, this opposition research, in a way that I didn't expected. It moved me from thinking about the world of politics to ethical living and to the legacies we each live. While professional operatives were planning how to respond if something bad came up, that was their job. That's what they wanted to know. Tell us your worst secret and we'll figure out how to make it go away. That was their job. But for me, it was a journey of self-reflection. And when I was thinking about it, I didn't also think about the places I had been. I also thought about the places I decided not to go. Why did I choose the path that was easier and not the one more difficult? Regrettably, opposition research wasn't meant to help me or any candidate become a better person or a better public servant. It's only meant to help get someone elected, to deflect the bad and highlight the good, and in some cases, deny the bad or twist it. It does not improve our nation. And there was a moment during this journey that I came to realize that the reflection I was doing was the kind of reflection we are asked to do each and every Yom Kippur. In a much less public and a much less stressful way, opposition research, looking at our lives without blinking, is what we are asked to do. Perhaps my focus was a little different. I'm not a politician. I didn't run as a politician. I ran as a rabbi, somebody who's been doing this for a very long time, somebody who's given dozens of Yom Kippur sermons. So my natural inclination, perhaps, was to see opposition research as an expression of what Kol Nidre is about. Kol Nidre isn't about politics, not even with a small p. It isn't meant for us to figure out how to find our faults and then reshape our stories, even the ones we tell ourselves. It is meant for us to become better people, to realize that we have had missteps and that we have an opportunity to correct them, to honestly examine our shortcomings and work to improve ourselves, to acknowledge that we may not have lived up to our own values, and that we vow to be better in the year to come. Frankly, we need more of this. We need more people willing to examine their own lives, not in an attempt to get elected, but in an effort to become better people. And through becoming better people, we can make our world, our nation, and our communities better as well. Yom Kippur asks us, in the privacy of our own minds and own hearts, to truly examine who we are and how we've lived and what we've done. It asks us, have we lived up to the standards and values we claim to hold? But just like opposition research can evoke worry, so too can this process and reflection be challenging. If we honestly do it, it can be worrisome. What are we going to find about ourselves? What are we going to remember? Trying to see ourselves as we are and not as we would like to be perceived is not always a painless or easy process. Turning one's vision inward, if sincerely done without self-deception, can, and I would suggest, must be challenging. But this exploration that we're on tonight in this Yom Kippur, it's private. It's not going to be used against us on TV. We don't need to reveal to anyone else what we've discovered. We do this process as a community and part of our tradition. But we're not telling each other our secrets, but we have support because people are with us. But there is a part of the opposition research that I also think we can claim and we should take. What have we each done well this year? I think too much time is only spent on where we have misstepped, rather than also where we have stepped. What have we done that we can be proud of? What moments have we risen up and given voice to things that need to be said? When have we marched or protested or reached out to somebody in need or apologized for an ill or a hurt? I think it is as appropriate to think about our missteps as it is to now think about what we have done. And I would urge each of us, not in an effort to create some commercial that we're going to publicize, but think about the highlight reels, those positive efforts you have made. as we look back on this year, we will see both missteps and steps. And we can look with pride at the things we've done. We hold both of these realities about who we are in our hearts and minds, our failures and our successes, our triumphs and our stumbles. Opposition research is about winners and it's about losers. It's about money and it's about power. But Kol Nidre is about who are we and what we do. It's not about comparing ourselves to the person sitting to the right of us or to the left of us. It's about judging ourselves. It's personal and private. Opposition research needs to be fixed. But tonight isn't about fixing our national problems. Tonight is about each of us turning our gaze inward and asking ourselves, have I lived up to who I want to be? Have I been the person I'm proud to look at the mirror in each day? And in another very significant way, Kol Nidre and opposition research are very different. Kol Nidre is the start of a new year. Kol Nidre isn't an ending, but it's a marker along a journey of our life. It gives us a chance to reflect and then to recommit ourselves to trying better. When you listen to the Kol Nidre carefully, it is not about the mistakes of the past. It reads, let all the vows and oaths, all the promises we make, all the obligations we incur on ourselves between this Yom Kippur and the next, it's about the future. Kol Nidre calls us to tomorrow. It asks us to take a chance. It asks us to see where we've been and to figure out a course that we will be proud of in the year to come. Kol Nidre reminds us that though we may have stumbled, our journey is not over. It continues. It asks us to boldly and bravely look at the new year, meet the opportunities and challenges it affords. Life is not a 60-second commercial. It is not a highlight reel. Life is a journey all of us are on, and it has peaks and it has valleys. As we meet the new year, may we find the courage to do so with integrity and purpose.